Well, welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. This is Robert Travis Scott. I'm the president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana. I'm happy to be sitting in today for Jim Inkster, who will be back later in the week. If you want to join the conversation today, the number to call locally is 297-5633, and the toll-free number is 1-877-217-5757. You can email us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Well, Lake Charles, Louisiana has been making a stir nationwide and worldwide with the extraordinary number of industrial announcements that have come along in the last couple of years. This is a community, Calcasieu Parish, that already has about 73,000 people, already has a pretty substantial infrastructure of chemical and petrochemical companies. And just in recently, we've seen one extraordinary announcement after another. AAR, which is the aircraft maintenance company, a defense contractor, is going to bring 750 jobs and kind of revive the old Aeroframe facility. They've had a grain handling facility that's bringing in a lot of jobs. G2X Energy announced a gas-to-gasoline facility, $1.3 billion of investment, 250 jobs. Magnolia LNG, $2.2 billion export facility. And probably the biggest one of all, the one that's making the most headlines, is Sasol. They're going to invest about $14 billion, maybe up to $21 billion, for a natural gas to liquid fuel facility there. It's going to bring in many thousands of workers for construction, and then eventually, when it gets underway, about 1,200 jobs. Now, this is a major impact that we see on our community. And I want to begin by introducing some of our guests who are joining us today from Lake Charles. Mayor Randy Roach from Lake Charles is on the line. Randy, hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Are we on?
Yes, you are. Welcome to the Jim Inkster Show. And thanks for joining us. We also have with us Mike Danahay, the state representative from District 33, which is based in Sulphur. And good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. You gentlemen are facing some extraordinary challenges there, and we'll have Jim Beam joining us just in a few moments. Well, Randy, let's start with you. I think that you are in the center of a maelstrom of activity, of both opportunity and challenge. How do you see this sizing up for your community, and how are you dealing with it?
Robert, first of all, thank you for having us. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. And yeah, it's a great opportunity for us. It kind of reminds me of the old saying, be careful what you ask for. You know, we have worked very hard for a number of years to try to rebuild our economy in the wake of what happened in 2008, what happened in 2005. The financial collapse around the country, of course, was an impact that everybody felt. And then, of course, when we had Hurricane Rita in 2005, we just kind of were on a continual state of recovery, as was and is, I guess, most of the coastal region of the state for one reason or another. But several years ago, if I could give you just a little bit of a perspective,
sure.
Several years ago, and this is probably back in the 1990s, late 1980s, 1990s, we as a community made, I wouldn't say it was necessarily a deliberate decision, but it was pretty much a conscious decision to embrace LNG as an energy industry. And we had
liquefied natural gas.
Right, yes, liquefied natural gas. And, you know, and those facilities are somewhat controversial, but we made the conscious decision to work with them and to encourage that industry here in our community. And we have Trunkline LNG came, and of course Trunkline had been here for a while, and then we had Sempra came, and of course Cheniere Energy. So we have three major facilities. And that work, I guess, has helped us in terms of establishing our region as a center for activity. That's certainly complemented what we have here in the petrochemical industry. And of course, you know, like in Baton Rouge, you've got a lot of petrochemical companies over there. We have the same.
That's right. And you are already on the map. for this type of development, not only because you had some infrastructure there before, some labor pool there, but also the port, which is a very active port feeding out to the Gulf of Mexico, rail lines, highways, and you sort of have a lot of what's needed.
Right. And so it all just sort of came together sort of in a unique way. And then when Sasol developed their technology, the gas to liquids technology, of course, this area was already on the map relative to liquefied natural gas, and just one thing led to another. So Sasol, of course, they would not come here if it were not for our other tax incentives. And, of course, the state and Stephen Moray and the Governor Jindal have been tremendous partners in working this project through the process of getting it done.
And this Sasol project, this is the biggest of the big in terms of announcements of facilities.
Right.
I mean, even nationwide or even across the globe, this is attracting attention. I just saw a special report on this on CNN. But this is also bringing in a lot of people. There's the construction phase that will bring in many thousands. And then, of course, when these facilities get into operation, they're all the employees. How are you braced to handle this in terms of housing, schools, et cetera?
Well, we are in the process of trying to answer that question right now. I think the reality is that you will not be able to have everything in place that you need so that there can be just sort of a seamless process. As ideal as that would be, I think we all have to recognize there's going to be a little bit of inconvenience that we're going to experience to one degree or another. We are working together as a community. We formed a group. We call it the GO Group, Growth and Opportunity. We call it GO Group, sorry, the acronym for it. Actually, we patterned that. We went back to the book, so to speak, and looked at the legislation that the legislature approved establishing the Louisiana Recovery Authority. And we used that as a sort of a framework as to how we would approach this particular challenge, and it's an economic one, but there's a lot of the same elements that we've dealt with in recovery, and so it was something that we were familiar with, that we could relate to because of our work with the Louisiana Recovery Authority and recovery after Hurricanes Rita and Hurricane Ike.
And GO Group brings together people in education, economic development, and so on?
Right. We have all those subcommittees. We have law enforcement, which includes public safety. We've got healthcare, we've got education, we've got infrastructure, we've got, like I said, housing, we've got all those basic elements that are covered. And so we pull together people in the community that deal in those particular areas. And so we're sort of have asked them to identify those issues, bring it to us so that we can then try to deal with that and work through that process.
How about that? Representative Danahay, you see this really from two perspectives. You're seeing it from the local perspective as someone who represents people in your community, and you also see it from the state-level perspective out of the state capitol. What can you tell us, Mike, about how the state ought to be looking at this and how people in Baton Rouge ought to be looking at this through that lens of the state legislature and state economic development activity?
Well, Robert, thank you very much for having us today. I think that some of the things that people from the other areas of the state, we're starting to hear from other areas of the state of what's taking place in Southwest Louisiana. And it's an opportunity for all of Louisiana, actually. Historically, in Southwest Louisiana, we've had some build-outs before. Of course, when the petrochemical industry decided to settle here in the 40s was a big build-out. And then in the mid to late 70s, we had another big build-out. Nothing that's to this magnitude. This is unprecedented, we feel like. And like you say, we're getting a lot of attention from all over the state as well as the nation. It's going to be a mecca for a lot of people for opportunity. And that extends, of course, to everywhere across Louisiana. So from a state standpoint, I think this is an opportunity for everyone.
And, Mike, you, I think, saw what happened last week, that the special committee, the Joint Budget Committee, approved a cooperative endeavor agreement that allows for substantial state incentives for the Sasol project in particular. And I guess that was at least momentarily a controversial issue because of the size of the incentive package. Is it a fair package, and should everyone else in the state support it, Mike?
Yes, indeed. There was some question from a couple weeks ago whether what kind of dollar amount was on those incentives. Secretary Morey took those questions and answered those questions very well, and the package itself is about a $257 million incentive package over a 15-year period. Of course, the return on that, the state will benefit over $600 million in the time period, too. There was some question of whether those incentives would pay for themselves. We feel like it certainly will pay for themselves, more than 10 times over probably. And in long term, it's, of course, you know, we feel like it's going to be a huge impact to the state of Louisiana.
And part of the point of this facility, if I understand it, this SASOL facility, is to bank on a lot of the fracking that's going on for natural gas in Louisiana and elsewhere in the region. And because they know that gas is there and can be obtained and prices are low, at least currently and maybe for the foreseeable future, they see this as an opportunity to take that gas and to use it to convert and even export a lot of that. Is that correct?
That's correct. They, of course, the gas is liquids, SASOL gas, the liquids plant is going to take a substantial amount of gas for that, their production purposes. The LNG facilities initially were built for import. That's what they're all built for, actually.
To bring it in to the United States.
And the build-out that they're talking about doing now in those facilities, as well as in addition to other LNG facilities, is for export. And that's directly due to the fact of fracking that's taking place all across the United States.
Jim Beam, you've been following the news there in Lake Charles for many years. I won't say how many. But you're very, very well-respected columnist there at the American Press. Have you ever seen anything quite like this take place in Lake Charles?
I think it's the biggest thing, Robert, since the plants first came here in World War II. That was a big time then. I think one of the first plants here was a Olin Matheson Chemical Company in the late 30s. But this is the only thing that, this is probably even bigger than that. But in those days, I think, when City Service came here and Continental Oil and some of these big oil companies, that probably ranks, you know, is the biggest growth we've had in that era. And this is the number two, I guess. And this may be even bigger than that was then. And of course, that reason they're all here is form the basis for what's taking place now.
297-5633, if you're in the Baton Rouge area, 297-5633 to join the conversation, or you can email us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Jim, is the community ready for the big impact of all this development?
I think the community is ready. I think the leadership, though, is even more prepared than maybe the average citizen is. The big areas, and I think I mentioned to you, my son's involved with the Calcasieu Parish Police Jury. The biggest areas we're talking about here are housing and transportation, and, workforce development, I guess, is the biggest thing. And I think we seem to be a little bit ahead of the curve. I don't know if Mayor Roach and Representative Ben Hay would agree with it, but there was some talk here last week when Mary Landrieu was here, the local Suwellis Technical and Community College. You know, they're getting ready. They're going to build a building just to train.
Yeah, we're going to, and then we'll get right back to that. We'll be right back with you. Hang in there with us. We'll talk more about the phenomenal things going on in Lake Charles on the Jim Inkster Show. Welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. Robert Travis Scott with the Public Affairs Research Council sitting in for Jim Inkster today. We're talking to three gentlemen from the Lake Charles area who are telling us about the amazing series of industrial announcements that have gone on in Lake Charles very recently and how the community is bracing for the impact of all that. 297-5633, if you want to join the conversation, 297-5633. And toll free 1-877-217-5757. Gentlemen, I think one of the biggest issues that comes up when we're looking at all of this massive influx of work that's coming into Lake Charles is that they're going to need people. They're going to need a talented workforce on a lot of different levels. Where are these folks going to come from? And obviously, they can't all come from the local workforce. There has to be some people brought in from the outside, and there has to be a lot of training to get people to the right levels.
Robert,
I know that, I know the chat's always
Oh, everybody wants to answer that one. Go ahead, Randy. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Well, we're real fortunate here. We've got Sowella, which is our local technical community college, and they've done a great job over the years working with area industry to develop programs to help train the workforce. And they've even got a process in place where they can take a particular industry, a particular craft or whatever, and they can tailor. They've got a pretty good system where they can tailor that training program to adapt to that particular need. So we have, I think, the basic mechanics in place to train particularly those people here in our community and around this area that need to get the training to help, you know, to take some of these jobs. But you're right. I think you touched on it. You have this many workers coming in, and there's a projection over the next 4 to 5 years, about 22,000 construction jobs that will be needed and will be available in this area. So you can't hire that many people from the community. One of the things that we did in our first meeting as a GO group, we had a presentation from some of the folks in Southeast Texas who went through a similar period in the late 2008 to 2011 period of time, and they had a similar, not quite as much, but a similar experience, not quite as much in terms of investment, in terms of dollars, but yet the same impact on the community. And they pointed out some pretty good points that we all need to keep in mind, and that is that, first of all, this construction activity, it comes and it goes. So you have to be careful that you don't overcommit and don't overdevelop resources to service that need, and then when that's gone, boom, you know, then the market leaves with
it. And particularly in housing, you have to house all those construction workers, and then when that big construction boom period starts to subside, what's left? You might end up with an overcapacity of apartments and so on.
And they're dealing with that right now, by the way. I mean, they have that. They were overbuilt in some of the hotels and some of the other housing that they had. One of the things that the Port of Lake Charles has done here, there's this idea, it's been done to one degree or another in Canada and in some areas of North Dakota and some of the other areas around the country where they have some of these boom cycles, and they call them man camps. I'm not sure I really like that word, but nonetheless, it's a large residential housing area for the construction workers that come to the community. Port is working with a developer to take a piece of property that the port has and develop a complex that will have the capacity to handle up to 4,000 workers. And And so that will be a real benefit in terms of trying to handle that need. And of course, the construction that will take place to build that facility, it's going to have a life cycle where it could continue as long as it needs to be, or it could be dismantled and could be replaced. So that's one way to approach that problem.
Well, Representative Danahay, I want you to address this question too, and certainly that came up on Friday at the Legisgator. And if you don't know what the Legisgator is, that's a big event that takes place in Lake Charles every year that brings in a lot of economic development, business, and legislative personalities to Lake Charles to talk about what's going on in that region. And that event drew, it was at least 800 people, did it not, Mike?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, and there were enough legislators there, you could have passed a bill, I think.
We were close to having quorum, I promise.
Just about. Well, how are you looking at this workforce issue and how it's going to be addressed?
Well, and I think that, you know, as I alluded to earlier, this is going to be an opportunity for citizens all across Louisiana as well as other parts of the country. Certainly, we will try to train and facilitate the workforce here as best we can through Sowella Tech. But we also know that the magnitude of the craftsmen that we're going to need will probably come from elsewhere just as well. And so the opportunity is going to be there for others to come. And like I say, Randy addressed the idea of what we're going to do with those temporary employees through housing. One of the things that we also have to look at, and I've tried to emphasize, is that our infrastructure will change. How do you move 7,000 employees to and from a job site? Good question. How do you move equipment to that job site? How do you move materials to that job site of that magnitude? So those are the questions that we're struggling with. And the GO Group is a very good group. And I guess if anything comes, you know, something good comes from bad, is what Randy's talked about how we formed the GO Group here in Southwest Louisiana, which, you know, is a consortium of leaders throughout the Southwest Louisiana, as well as business leaders and private sector people to help us formulate what we need to do and do it very rapidly. I think the urgency now is at time. We're looking at the groundbreaking on the Sasol project on the ethane cracker unit taking place in about a year from now. So there's a great sense of urgency here, and there's a great sense of excitement here. And I think the GO Group is doing a fantastic job of addressing some of those.
Well, you have that Interstate 10 that runs through, and you also have that Interstate Loop, something that Baton Rouge does not have. Yeah. You also have that Interstate Loop that goes down through the south part. So there is some... is some possibility that you already have some infrastructure that maybe some other communities don't have. How do you, in the long run, make sure that this is a local workforce that you're really building up? And how much are the companies doing to help look at this sort of long-term view of building up Lake Charles? I mean, I would imagine that these companies probably could bring in people from other countries. And and how are we dealing with that end of it? And what is the corporate commitment and the corporate involvement in trying to pull all this together, because it can't be just you folks in the community trying to do it.
Yes, and I think so. The Lake Area Industry Alliance has been very instrumental, in helping facilitate that. They also understand, like you say, as our workforce builds, and even after the build-out takes place, you're going to have people from all over the world that will be settling here. And it's going to have to bring into those quality of life issues, you know. And so those are the things we want to see in growth in our area. And I think that it will take place. The private sector will take care of a lot of it, we feel like. But then and all, we want to see a sustainable growth that takes place, and want it to be a controlled growth in some ways. And so that's where I think the governmental entities are involved, is foreseeing what's going to take place in the future.
I want to know how this is going to impact the fishing down there, because of course you have Calcasieu Lake, also known as Big Lake, there locally, and probably a lot of people don't realize that's one of the premier fishing spots in the nation. And
Robert, now everybody knows.
I know, and y'all like to keep that secret. You don't want me telling anybody about it, but it's true. But I guess that would be one asset for you to bring some workers into the region.
Well, it's certainly an asset, and we certainly enjoy that resource. I like to tell people when I welcome different groups to Lake Charles, I stand at the Civic Center podium and I say, within an hour, I can take you saltwater fishing, I can take you freshwater fishing, I can take you duck hunting, I can take you goose hunting, I can take you deer hunting, I can take you turkey hunting, take you squirrel hunting. I mean, whatever you want to do. I mean, as far as the outdoors are concerned, this is a great place for that. And, of course, it attracts people here all during the hunting season, and a lot of those folks know about it and really enjoy it. And even the birding interest know about this area. Years ago, I think he's passed away now, but Roger Torrey Peterson, who is recognized in birding circles, he wrote, I think, the Bible, so to speak, the birding Bible, and not the Bible, but the birding Bible. And anyway, he used to come here every May and spend some time down in some areas in Cameron Parish, just cataloging the numbers of different birding species that would come down and spend some time in the springtime here. So it's got a great resource. I don't see this really adversely impacting that. I really don't think so. we're fortunate in the geography here that it just won't allow that. I mean, we've got the marshes and the wetlands, and you've got three federal wildlife refuges in Cameron and one state wildlife refuge. And so I think God made sure that we'd be able to enjoy that resource for a long time.
There's a lot of nature, a lot of water, a lot to do there, and almost every driveway has a boat. Jim Beam, you working there at the newspaper, is the newspaper enthusiastic about what's happening? Because I would assume this would mean more retailers, more advertising, maybe more circulation. Are you looking at it from that perspective?
Yeah, we're looking at all of that. We brought in an experienced industrial reporter who can, who's already started working. He's working, Frank DeRusso. He's doing a good job already getting in the ground floor and some of this stuff. I think one of the things, when we talk about workforce, Robert, we need to remember, we're not talking about 22,000 jobs next year. We're talking about a gradual buildup of 22,000 jobs that will reach their peak in 2016. And I think in the case of Sasol and some of these other new developments, they have already contacted McNeese and also Sewella and to let them know, you know, what kind of people they're looking for. And, of course, they're going to bring some of their own folks in, too. So we've got, about 3 years here to deal with this workforce thing. Some of the industry people here, when Mary Landry was here last week, Larry Darrisell, who's the director of the Lake Area Industry Alliance, he said, you know, we need some short-term programs like eight-week program. You can take a guy that's got some experience in some of these fields in 8 or 16 weeks. You can train him to take on some of these new jobs. So you don't necessarily need all two-year people, and you're not going to have enough engineers. Even LSU, can't produce enough of them. They'll bring some of those in. But I think the people locally that will have a shot at it, and George Swift, who's the head of
the Southwest Louisiana Economic Development Alliance, right. He's done an extraordinary job.
A lot of poverty people are going to benefit from this thing, with the hopes of having a little better job.
Mm-hmm. Well, schools, more people, more families, more students. How are we gearing up to deal with that? Either a gym,
I think,
or
so. Randy might be able to answer that better than I can, but I think the education people are definitely involved in all of this development.
Right,
Randy.
Jim, that's right. We have, like I said, we have our education committee, and the school board is looking at this as well. We're going to have to look at some temporary, facilities for some of these children that will be coming in with these families. And so that's also something that we're not not a stranger to. We've dealt with that type of thing before. The other issue, I guess, that's really going to be something that I think is going to be a big challenge is to deal with the way in which we house people, because housing, of course, is impacts how where children go to school. So that's all going to be something
right.
that, to be honest with you, we just have to work out, and that's something I can't answer yet.
And I think Sasol is moving some people out of some neighborhoods that are sort of on the borderline, on the fence. They've come in and offered to buy people's homes and to move them away. How is that process going? And I guess they all have to go somewhere.
Well, Mike Danahay, that's in his district, so Mike might want to address that.
Go ahead.
Sure, Randy. Thank you. Initially, Sasol came in and wanted to buy a buffer area that had quite a few residents in which they went in and they negotiated with those homeowners and were able to buy those properties. There's a couple of neighborhoods that are communities that are contiguous to that Sasol doesn't necessarily need those properties, but they're going to what they call a volunteer buyout program, and they're offering these people the opportunity to sell out at a very fair price is their properties. And it's only voluntary. So if they choose to, they can. If they choose to stay, they can stay. It's been received quite well, I think, in those communities. And once the program is laid out to them, I think most of the people are going to take the opportunity to leave their communities. And like I say, create a greater buffer for Sasol.
That's right. So you have not only a lot of development, new jobs going in, but even within the whole community, you have people moving from one area to another. And so it's going to be hard to predict which schools are going to be impacted, and the retailers are probably wondering where things are going to pick up.
That's true. And that's the challenge I think the school board has is how do you judge which schools are going to be greatly impacted or not. As far as retail is concerned, I think the private sector will be a driving force there. That as people move in, that you're going to see other outside interests want to come in and settle in Southwest Louisiana, which we're excited about. We're very and receptive to. And it's going to great, create opportunity even for the locals here, whether it be because I foresee situations like you talk about. We talk about what's going to take place. You sit in a restaurant and you may have an hour wait to get into a restaurant because of the influx of people that we'll have here. Traffic congestion, that will be an issue that takes place. And so those are the kind of quality of life things that we talk about. We can
tell you about some of those things here in Baton Rouge.
Yes, indeed. Y'all experienced that, and they're still experiencing it, I promise you.
Well, we don't have much more time. We have an email from Sherry, and Sherry says, McDermott will be closing its operations in Morgan City with estimates of 1,000 jobs impacted or lost. Is there any opportunity for those individuals to get in on this new development in Lake Charles? Gentlemen, one of you want to take a shot at that? Are you recruiting McDermott employees?
Well, sir, Robert, I would say that that those employees would be welcome over here, and hopefully as they phase out over there, they can phase in over here. That'd be a great opportunity for them. And we'd love to be able to do that. And we have a workforce development committee, and I will make sure that they get in touch with those folks at McDermott and find out a little bit more detail about the crafts that are being impacted.
Well, we're running out of time, but Randy, I'm going to let you take us out. What message do you have for the rest of us in the state about what's happening in Lake Charles? What do you want us to most take home?
Well, I certainly want the state to know that we thank the state because were it not for the rest of the state supporting what we're doing here in terms of the incentives and the package that was just approved by the legislature last week, we wouldn't be able to be even having this conversation. So we look at this as a not just a Southwest Louisiana project, but it's a Louisiana project.
Well, and yes, and thanks a lot, Randy, and good luck to you there, leading the city of Lake Charles as mayor. Mike Danahy, state representative from District 33, thanks for joining us. Good luck in your work.
Thank you,
Rob. Jim Beam, we'll be seeing you around campus. This is the Jim Inkster Show. Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. I'm Robert Travis Scott, the president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana, sitting in for Jim Inkster today. And we have two ladies here from an organization called Kids Orchestra Incorporated. Jody Ane, the executive director of Kids Orchestra, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And we have Susanna Montandon, the program manager with the Kids Orchestra. And I'm going to ask them to tell us a little bit about that. But while you're listening, if you want to call in and talk, the number is 297-5633. That's 297-5633. Or you can email us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Well, Jody, this is a rather special initiative that y'all have created. Tell us about Kids Orchestra.
Well, what we like to say with Kids Orchestra is that we're creating harmony across community. And the mission of Kids Orchestra is to bring children of all cultures and background together using music education as a vehicle to foster teamwork, develop understanding, and to emphasize excellence. So what we're doing is we created an orchestra that is spread across Baton Rouge in many different schools, and we teach the children about music and teach them how to play an instrument, and we also feed them a healthy snack. We also teach them, give them help with their homework, and then they get their wonderful music lesson. And then we bring them all together at least once a month to practice as an orchestra. Currently, we have over 150 children involved in the program.
Now, is this all in East Baton Rouge? Or?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It's all in East Baton Rouge.
And do they participate during school hours?
No, this is an after-school program.
It's after school. Okay.
We meet twice a week after school.
Mm-hmm. And so did you have to coordinate with the schools at all, or you're able to run this program independently from the schools?
No, we actually coordinate with the schools. We ask the schools to come in, and what we do is we pair schools together. For instance, we have Brownsville Elementary or Brownfields Elementary School paired with Redemptorist Catholic Schools. So we actually bus the children from Redemptorist Catholic over to Brownfields after school. And we put all the children together. We give them their snack. We do homework with them. And then they break off into their orchestra or their instrumental lessons. And we have seven different school sites that we're in, and we have about a total of 16 schools that participate.
How about that? Now, that's been growing, right? I mean, your
yes.
organization has not been around that long, is that right?
This is only our third year.
Is that right?
Okay. Yes.
And who are your supporters?
We have great supporters. One of the biggest supporters we have is the Powell Group, and they have been incredible.
That's run by Nanette Powell.
Nanette Noland. Yes,
Nanette
sir.
Noland, excuse
yes.
me.
Yes. And she actually was the person who kind of, she was our founder. She came up with the idea. And the reason how it was kind of, how Kids Orchestra kind of came into being was that she sings in the choir over at St. James Episcopal. And Father Mark Holland gave this great sermon one morning that spoke about, he proposed to his congregation. He said, he asked them, you know, how many friends or acquaintances do you have who are different in racial, religious, and economic and cultural background than you? And Ms. Nolan really thought about that. And then it just happened that the same day there was a 60-minute segment done on the Los Angeles Philharmonic conductor Gustavo Dudamel. And he is Venezuelan-born and was part of an El Sistema program as a child in Venezuela. El Sistema is a program designed for underprivileged children to learn how to play in an orchestra. And he's bringing that program to Los Angeles. And she was so inspired by it. And she said, why can't we do this in Baton Rouge? And not only bring orchestra to underprivileged children, but bring orchestra to all children. And so that's the reason we pair schools together.
So this is a nonprofit organization. And the purpose of it, I guess, is you're telling us, is not just to teach music, but it's also to, I guess, break down some cultural barriers or to bring the community together a little bit more. Now, Susanna, as program manager, you're having to deal hands-on with
yes,
the students. Mm-hmm. And why don't we take a moment and listen to a little clip of one of the groups. Just before we turn it on, Susan, tell us what this little music we're about to hear is all about.
Well, this is from our spring concert from last spring, and it's the flute showcase that they played. I think it's called Glowworm, mm-hmm. and it's so cute. It's
Glowworm, a classic from the Kids Orchestra. How old are these kids who are playing?
Oh, they range from age 7 to age 10, so they're quite young.
How about that? Mm-hmm. So tell us about the challenge of teaching the music, but also the challenge of bringing people together, these students together from different backgrounds.
Well, the challenge is certainly to recruitment and going into the schools and saying, you know, what we offer and getting them to sign up and their parents to be excited about our program. And the teaching part of it for our teachers that we hire, most of them are from the Baton Rouge Symphony or play in the Baton Rouge Symphony. A lot of them are graduate students at LSU. So the challenge for them is to bring those children together that have hardly any musical experience whatsoever, and then pair them with students that might also have some experience, and trying to teach them a song that they would play for our concerts at the end of each semester.
I see. So if you're a parent out there listening to this and you are interested in getting your child involved in it, what should you do and what should you expect from this experience?
Hopefully a love of music, and fun definitely is something that we'd like to promote for our organization. We definitely, you know, provide hopefully a solid foundation for music education and also just a connection of our teachers and our students together to provide sort of a base that we'd like to provide for the students as far as homework and knowing that there's an adult there that loves and cares for them within our organization.
And how much say do you as the parent or the child get in what instrument you're going to play?
That's a tough question. Well, one thing is that's really unique about our program is that we provide all of the instruments. So when a child signs up for Kids Orchestra, it's a full package, mm-hmm. and we provide the instrument, and we speak with the child, we talk with the child and with the parent, and work together to figure out what instrument would be appropriate for that child, and then we provide it. Another thing that's really wonderful about our program is that if a child is on free or reduced lunch at school, then their tuition is automatically covered, their scholarship, because of our great support from many different sources. We have support from Classics for Kids, who we got a grant this year that actually paid for $12,000 worth of instruments. It's a national organization.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Every Kid a King Fund, and we've just gotten incredible support in such a small amount of time.
And you as a student, if you participate in the program, do you get to keep the instrument?
Well, no.
Okay.
However, what we have done is we have students that are so passionate about their instruments that we have let them take them home over the summer, and they practice over the summer, and then they bring them back. Also, we help them find an instrument if they want to continue. You know, we will help them get an instrument, maybe at a discounted price or something if they need that.
I would imagine if you look at what inspires kids locally as far as music is concerned. Of course, we have a really beautiful orchestra here in town. There's a lot of blues music in our roots here, but there's also the college bands at LSU and at Southern, which I imagine some of these kids aspire to play in those bands one day.
Oh, yes, and definitely. We have, I think we're pairing with the Louisiana Youth Orchestra this year to kind of bring our children in for a rehearsal to kind of see that what they can aspire to as far as continuing on with their instrument when they're finished with our organization, and then from there, you know, going on to LSU and then the Baton Rouge Symphony and just kind of furthering that music passion and that career.
Should take them down to the Pete Maravich Center before the game to watch the pep rally, because the band comes in before the
right.
game and plays a great
concert.
Well,
we have a huge percussion group.
You mean a lot of kids want to play the drums?
A lot of kids want to play the drums.
Okay.
And that inspiration comes from hearing those wonderful bands of LSU and Southern and wanting to be a part of that.
Need some very patient parents if you're going to have the drums in the house. I remember I brought a set of drums into my house when my two girls were very young, and I was very unpopular with my wife for a little while. but everyone got used to it.
I can imagine.
Tell us about, so you can get into this program as a parent or child. You can get into this at either very low cost or no mm-hmm. cost.
Well, we have a tuition, and it's about $300 a semester, which equates to about $7 a lesson because we meet twice a week. And then on Sundays, once a month, we have a big all-orchestra rehearsal. Plus, we do two concerts a year. Plus, we have a chamber orchestra that meets, and we travel around Baton Rouge performing. Last year, we performed at the Rural Life Museum Easter Egg Hunt. We performed for the Blues Festival. And so we travel around with those, going to those different places.
And we heard the flute group, but right. Does the whole crowd get together for an orchestra concert?
We do.
What is that, and when does that happen?
Well, we have one in December, and Christian Life Academy is on Perkins Road, and that's where we have our concerts. And they have been so generous. They actually donate their space to us, and we have a big concert there with all of the children. And that's the reason that we have our once a month orchestra rehearsal, so that we can bring all the children together and give them the opportunity to play together. And we actually work as a regular orchestra. We put them into sectionals, and they practice with their violins and violas and flutes, and then they do a little showcase piece, and then we come all together and we perform.
Well, I'm wondering here that this is much more than just learning about music, though. I mean, there's a broader plan you have here, and I wonder if you could dive a little bit deeper into that area of it, of why you're conducting it in this particular way. This is not just about learning music.
I have to give her credit. We just got two new interns, and one of our interns, Sarah Hyman, she said it so beautifully the other day. I couldn't have said it better. She said, what we do is we bring music into the lives of children, and we create community across differences. And I thought that was just so well said about what we do, because what we want to do is we want to bring children together that may never have had the opportunity to meet and to see each other and to form friendships across Baton Rouge. So that's the reason that we pair schools together. For instance, we have St. James Episcopal Day School. We have a site there, and we bus in children from Dufrock Elementary School to St. James. And we also are at St. Luke's Episcopal. We bring in children from LaSalle Elementary.
And so the idea is to bring children from different backgrounds together. But Susanna, yes. How does that chemistry work? I mean, how do you keep the kids from the same school when they come to rehearsal just hanging out together and not communicating with the other kids?
In our instrument lessons, our hope is so that they form friendships across those school boundaries, and that they hang out together with each other. And also we try to do games and homework and try to, break those barriers down and break those school boundaries down, so that they end up hanging out with each other and having fun together. And that's our hope, is to break those down. Yeah, I think so. It definitely happened in our summer camp that happened in July. We had children from all different schools come together, private and public, and they formed friendships together and had a great time. And it's really wonderful to see that happen.
And do you let the parents come in and watch and experience this, or is it better to just keep them out of the picture?
Oh, absolutely. The parents come into the all-orchestra rehearsals on Sunday, when we have it on Sundays. And we have tables set up. Parents can come in and mingle and meet each other and sit down and talk about what's happening at Kids Orchestra, or talk about anything. But the component of the having the snack and having the homework, that is in there. I mean, it's great for the parents, because then all they have to do is just give supper, bath, and go to bed for the when they get home. But also that's a time for the kids to socialize and to come together. And also what we found is that we end up with children running over from different schools. And
yeah, that's great. Yes. Hey, real quick, want to get in touch with you? What's the best way to do that?
www.kidsorchestra.org. Go to our website.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much, Jody Anay and Susanna Montandon.
Thank you.
Great work with Kids Orchestra, and good luck with you. This has been the Jim Inkster Show. Thanks for joining us. Robert Travis Scott with the Public Affairs Research Council sitting in today for Jim Inkster. Great program. Come back and join us again for our next show.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.
Support.